Welcome everyone to a oh there we go. I see that's what happened. Welcome everyone to an episode of Buffalo Bills, maybe next year, the only podcast that's not entirely sure when a Google Hangout starts. I am your actually in the flesh host. I've just made a weird God, this is so freaky. How could you stand to look at me while we do these podcasts? My name is Frank.
I'm Scott.
I'm Paul. I'm the least good looking of the three. That's how you can identify me.
Yeah, but you're the only one wearing a suit. I've got my Corey Tede Corey National shirt on tonight for the big baseball game that's on behind this laptop. Scott was gracious enough to put it on despite the impending doom that this game will represent.
We still have a 2.7% chance of clinching the wild card, the wild card number two. So let's not rule anything out here. Yes, go down with the ship.
Yeah, very good.
You guys did synchronize your beards, though.
Oh yeah, well, I've been growing this for a month and Paul just started, so that counts, I guess.
Yeah.
I did. Although to be fair, Frank could get that amount of growth usually in about 3 days, whereas if I wanted to look like Frank, about 2017, I'd be there if I started now.
Beard-wise, you could never
Yes.
really look like
Right.
me.
I didn't mean to imply that Frank was replaceable in some way. Just in terms of beard matching, that would be the amount of time I would
Do you like our decorating that Scott did at the last second because he saw this really drab wall when we realized, like,
need.
oh, and so he hung up two jerseys that show up backwards because it's a webcam?
I think it was well done and well planned, whereas I have just pretentious French photos behind me here at my parents. But maybe if I tilt, there we go, we'll get a little another pretentious French
Now
photo.
yours seem to be facing the right way, so I'm wondering if
I
like
think
there's
they
a
might be the right. I
setting.
think they might be the right way on their end.
Okay.
Yeah, because yours look fine to me, your jerseys. It says
Oh, okay,
Evans and
good.
Jackson very clearly.
Okay,
It
good.
does
So
not
when
say
we're looking,
Snave nor Noskagaj.
okay. Well, when we're looking at them, they're backwards in this thing.
We do this all the time, folks. This
Okay.
is not our first time doing this.
Oh, in case you didn't know, this is a Buffalo Bills podcast, and the Buffalo Bills won a football game convincingly against AFC East rival the Miami Dolphins. So I feel like we should just make sure to say that so everybody knows that it is the right podcast, just because you're already out of sorts. You're seeing us if you're watching the YouTube video. We're probably not buzzing as much as we normally do. But
At least in terms of the sound, we've all had a bit to drink.
yeah, we're working with Oktoberfest.
I'm actually trying
Brought to you by Oktoberfest.
this harvest saison,
Okay.
which is a pretentious way of saying season. And God knows Boston Beer Company is nothing if not pretentious.
That's true.
And I'm going to pretend this is a thermos of vodka.
Very good. Well, we've had you live on the podcast before, drinking elderberry wine mixtures for, I don't know, whatever death group throat you had last year.
Yeah, that was bad. Although I have had, because again, this is the point of the podcast, is talking about my ailments. I've had this like nonstop cold and sore throat for like 2 weeks. So pity me, Bills fans, on that regard. Hopefully next week I'm up to full speed.
Well, we'll finish that story on our other podcast, maybe next ailment, and
Yes.
we'll go back to sports now. The Buffalo Bills won a football game, which even though I picked them to win, I'm shocked they won. They won in convincing fashion, 29-10. They started off slow in the first half, slow-ish. I mean, they did things. They weren't getting a lot of touchdowns, but they were up 9-0 at the half, right? And then they poured it on in the second. They outscored the Dolphins 20-10. Bills had 23, oh, sorry, only 13 first downs, but that to Miami's 23. But that was largely due to some really good field position on the part of the Buffalo Bills, as well as kind of not getting into end zones. The Bills were
Yeah, Bills'
flailing.
average drive start, by the way, I think was the what I read the 41-yard their 41-yard line. Miami's average drive start was the 19. So you're looking at having to go 25 yards a drive just to score, just to get in field goal range.
Yeah,
So
and
big
they did
difference.
routinely. They did routinely. Dan Carpenter had six field goals, right?
He had five made six.
Five of six attempts,
Yeah.
right? And it's weird if you look at some of the other numbers. Miami had the ball longer. They had the ball for 31 minutes, which included a very long stretch where, around the CJ Spiller kickoff return touchdown, where they had two very long drives. But they had more first downs. But Buffalo sort of beat them every other way that you can think of. Offensively, defensively, special teams. Scott, why don't you give us some thoughts on the game?
I think it's interesting. I mean, this is something that I remember last year. Like, the Bills would frequently end up winning in time of possession because they had the ball for long periods of time while their defense got run over, and then it was the end of the game, so we, you know, the team was perfectly content to go three and out and then punt. Mm-hmm. I think it shows that this team is a better team than it was last year. I think the most interesting thing to me about the game on Sunday was, you know, there was a lot of emotion attached to the win, given with everything that was going on with the sale of the Bills and Jim Kelly. And, you know, obviously, I think it was pretty illuminating that, like, Russ Brandon apparently was, like, shouting at the reporters, like, how excited he was at the end of the game. Because it's like, he clearly is like, this might save my job yet. So it's good that they're, you know, they were able to kind of ride this wave of momentum. But I still have concerns about this team in general, because they are not used to winning. And I think that's something that you kind of have to learn how to do. And this is something I talked about a little bit last week, but you have to learn how to remember what you're doing. And you have to take yourself out of the emotion of any one game, either high or low, and bear down and remember, hey, next week, if we're a winning team, if we're a playoff team, we're going to win more games than we lose, and we have to go ahead and just go on streaks regularly. And we have to beat other playoff teams in our home building. I'm not saying Miami's a playoff team. They didn't look like one on Sunday, certainly without Moreno. But, you know, we got another one potentially next week in San Diego coming in. And then Houston, I still don't think Houston's that good, but they're playing well right now. So it's not going to get any easier, and these games just get more important. But it's better to be where we are now than where the New Orleans Saints are. So
yeah, it's better to be 2-0 and learning things than 0-2 and learning things. Because we've had lots of years of 0-2 and learning things. Paul, what did you think? What did you make of the game?
You know, Scott brought up a very good point about how you handle these victories. And I go back to, you know, we often diss Chan Gailey on this podcast, but we also have admitted that we like the guy. And I'll never forget at the end of his Week 3 press conference when the Bills finally beat the Patriots in 2011. The Bills went to 3-0. And a reporter asked him, you know, well, what's next for you guys? And he said, well, how do you handle success? You know, how do you go out there the next game and respond to the fact that you're actually being praised? You're not looked at as the team in the outhouse that has something to prove, that you're the team that's expected to win. The Bills then proceeded to go to Cincinnati and blow a game they should have won, and that should have been symptomatic of what happened to that team starting 3-0, actually starting 5-2, and then going 1-8 the rest of the way.
Absolutely.
So as Scott brings up, and we brought up last week after they won, we don't want to overreact to this victory, but you know, he stated beautifully. The great thing was that this team is learning, you know, and winning as it's learning. You know, I want to bring up special teams. I want to brag, first of all, that my very first tweet when I was live tweeting this game...
It was pretty awesome. I read it after the fact.
Thank you, yes. I said, no issue with CJ taking that out. Cost team 5 yards, but one of these days he will break one. I said that after his opening kickoff where he only brought back to the 15. One of these days happened to be Sunday. And in addition to CJ's play, you had great punting, great punt coverage, recovering of a muffed punt. 5 out of 6 field goals, and the one that was blown was totally inconsequential to the game. You had a blocked punt for the first time since, what was it, 2006. I mentioned the field position earlier. That's a direct result of the great special teams, and we so criticized Danny Crossman this year. Doug Marone said, we just didn't give him any talent to work with last year. We skeptically said, whatever. But so far, they've said to Crossman, all right, you want your talent? Here's some talented guys. Here's your Spiller, your Brandon Spikes, your Corey Grahams. You know, Leotis McKelvin. Here are these talented players. Do something with them. And that really was difference-making. And I think the formula that they've had these first two games can be effective for the season of let the offense, you know, learn on the fly, but at the same time, let that defense be dominant, let the special teams do the things to make a difference. There are about 1 million other things to say, but I think they'll probably be more easily transitioned into as we keep discussing it. So I'll shut up and actually let Frank talk now.
It's a little bit ridiculous to think just how good this defense was. The fact that they could hold Miami to 10 points after they hung 30-some-odd against the Patriots. Now, that says a little something about the Patriots' defense, too, I think, when you let Ryan Tannehill do that. But they really did smother the team. They, you know, Corey Graham has been kind of a godsend, I guess is the right word, because he's kind of come out of nowhere and really sort of
I think for the number we got him as a free agent, I think he's overly exceeded expectations. In fact,
already. Yep.
He has six pass breakups. He is the NFL leader in pass breakups with six. I think Stephon Gilmore, I mean, he was hurt a lot of last year, but he had like four all of last year. So this is not a average defensive back who we're just kind of getting acquainted with. This is someone who's playing excellent defensive back right now.
So there was obviously that, which, I mean, I think that's the biggest. I think the defensive unit probably is the unit that wins the day for the Bills. That and the special teams, obviously the kickoff return touchdown. But if you look at the offense, you get exactly what you want out of EJ Manuel: 16 for 26, 202 yards and one touchdown. He threw down the field early, almost had Watkins on a burning play down through the middle of the field. If I remember right, he just missed him. Didn't really make mistakes. Didn't make any turnovers.
Yeah, no turnovers, no sacks. No weird delay of game penalties on him. No,
right.
Like you said, his mistakes were ones of missed plays, not of negative plays.
Right. We were talking about the one bad play down by the end zone, the fade route, which the first thing Scott said was that was just kind of terrible play call. Well, it was terrible play calling in the sense that they don't trust EJ yet, I guess, with those situations.
It was third down, and I forget which red zone series that it was, because there were so many red zone series that didn't end in touchdowns, which I think is obviously what everyone is taking away as the biggest fault of the team this Sunday. But yeah, and it was clear that, you know, they let him have one or two throws over the middle field, but on third down, when it was really coming down to it, they basically had the primary route be a fade route to the corner of the end zone, and it's like, that is a low percentage play. That is, however, it is also a percentage where you almost have no chance of being intercepted and no real way for the quarterback to end up going through his progressions, because he's going to be kind of covered on the fade route. It's just a question of, can you put it there with accuracy, and can the receiver get to the spot with enough kind of room in front of him to run? And it felt like a little bit of a give up one. So I feel like there's still plenty of learning that EJ has to do, and I think the red zone is where quarterbacks really, you know, that's where you make your money, because EJ could move the ball plenty easy between the 20s last year. It's in that last 20 yards when the windows get smaller, when the rush gets quicker, when there's more on the line, that's when you really have to perform. And for this game, while we were ahead, while the defense was playing well and the special teams was playing well, it was enough. But in the future, if we're on the road, if we're behind late in the game, that's when you need those red zone touchdowns. And that's something that this team's going – that's one of those things this team has to learn how to do.
Right. When I was interacting with Grant on Twitter, he even noticed that, well, hey, interception, you know, no interception in the red zone, played it conservative, that's fine. I sort of agreed, like, yeah, that's fine for now, but we do need to see that development in the red zone. Now, right. we're judging him based on last year's performance and on Sunday. Let's face it, against the Bears, he was excellent. They would have been perfect in the red zone conversions into touchdowns if it weren't at the end of the game, them making the decision that they were going to, you know, once Fred got down to the one, it's just like, we'll kick a field goal now.
Right.
So we can't judge them. So, but yeah, based on last year and this game, that is the biggest area to work on. And Scott said, that's where quarterbacks make their money.
Spiller and Jackson combined only for 80 some odd yards, 93 yards. And of course, one of them was a 47-yard run by Spiller. I read the DNC this morning, the Rochester DNC, and the guy pointed out, yeah, if you take out the 47-yard run, then it's a pretty weak day running the ball, but that's also not how it works. You have to include the guy in the 47-yard run.
I feel we talk about this at least once a season. A reporter who says, well, if you take out that 94-yard run, the Bills only gave up X amount. I mean, no, you can't take out that run.
The reporter pointed it out. Mayorana pointed it out, too. He's like, that is actually just not the way it works. Is, you know, so you can get on him that there wasn't a big yard per average, but yes, at least once a year somebody says, well, if it wasn't for those two big 90-yard runs.
I feel like I said that about the Bills last year too, because their run defense was actually basically that last year. I remember a lot of like, oh, we stopped them for no game, we stopped them for a loss, oh, we stopped them for no game, and then, oops, they broke one for 30. And then it's like, well, the 30 counts just as much as the other three.
Right.
It does. I tweeted right before the half when the Bills were routinely gaining one or two, like, don't mind teams sticking with the run. Eventually, Bills will break one, or play action will hit big play. And you know what?
Yeah.
Eventually, Spiller did break one for 40-plus yards. The next play, I think, was the Watkins touchdown. You know, and that was after the Miami had closed it within 6 points, within one touchdown of taking the lead.
Yep.
Bills are like, doesn't matter. This is what we're doing.
They held the Dolphins to 80 yards rushing, and they held, you know, the passing game to 210 yards. The net
and those passing game stats are total BS, as we all know.
Yeah, it was all Tannehill padding it late, and it was they did exactly what they were supposed to do. They shut down the run game, and they forced Ryan Tannehill to beat them. And Ryan Tannehill can't beat very many people.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think the only other – so the red zone's an issue. I think that's one thing that we have to keep watching. The other thing was obviously the injury to Moreno, which it's funny because I keep on saying Moreno, and I'm like, Moreno? Moreno.
Yeah,
Moreno.
No Sean, Dan Marino.
Right.
And that obviously – I mean, I think the Dolphins players were definitely talking right afterwards about how they were not playing with intensity and that Moreno brings them the intensity and that obviously he's a good back. I don't think he's like LeSean McCoy or Adrian Peterson or anything, but I think he is a good back and he played with a lot of intensity last week and he basically won that game for them in New England. So I will say that, you know, having that – having him in the game might have changed how this game went. Maybe we're not up 9-0 at half or 9-3 at half, whatever it was, and maybe it's a little more dicey. But I still think we played well enough to win with or without it. And I think it helps that, you know, I mean, well, it doesn't help, and we'll get to this later, but San Diego, they lost Ryan Matthews, and he's their number one back, and that's who's coming to town next. So, you know, teams have bad luck with injuries. We've had plenty of bad luck in the years, and we lost our best linebacker before the season even started. So,
right.
Suck it, Miami.
So do we want to do any other thoughts on the game? Do you want to guys go want to go to the three?
Yeah, I mean, I think some things that kick into my mind. I compared Chantrell Henderson to Kyle Williams, just like Cyrus Quantagatajo is to John McCargo. Was my basic analogy there. Like, here's a guy, lower round pick brought into support, maybe the higher round pick that you expect to succeed, and then in reality, Kyle Williams, of course, vaulted to Pro Bowl after Pro Bowl, has been arguably that was the only Bills elite player 5 years ago, and now finally has other elite players around him, whereas John McCargo phased away.
Right.
So if Cyrus isn't successful, I can kind of overlook it based on just how well Chantrell played. And again, yes, he was being helped. There was chip blocking on him. But even still, it's not like all the Bills' pass plays were, you know, three-step drops and throws. So I want to definitely give a shout-out
to
him.
That's Cameron Wake. So a lot of people get help with Cameron Wake when they're playing Miami. It's not like, you know, he's the only guy who can't handle Cameron Wake on his own. Plenty of guys can't. There was actually a nice article on Buffalo Rumblings today showing a lot of the different ways that they helped Chantrell. And certainly, on the one big run, he lucked out in that he sort of pushed him at the exact right moment, and CJ went right between Chantrell and Cameron Wake, and it was kind of like, it was sort of like a whoa sort of moment when they showed the replay. But yeah, totally, I'm with you. Great game by him. Please continue, Ball. Sorry, I wanted to.
Yeah, no, that was a good point. You know, I like the fact that, you know, they responded well when the Dolphins. We've seen the Bills get in this position before where they don't capitalize early, and then another team comes out and scores to start the half, and then that's the gain at the end. But instead, we had the Spiller run back, and yes, that was really impressive. But then after that, Miami scored a touchdown their next drive, so you're looking at a game that was 16-10. And then the drive right after that, where Spiller breaks his run, where Sammy Watkins gets his first NFL touchdown. That responsiveness is great. I enjoyed watching this team in the fourth quarter pretty much relaxed the whole time and just focusing on individual players or, you know, strategy and so forth. The one critique I would make in the game, as I try to find out when my tweet on this play, the Bills used they decided to punt. Okay, and this isn't what's the problem I had. They decided to punt on fourth down from the 39. Easy to criticize that, but they called a timeout before they punted, which to me was like, you could really use that timeout later. It was their second timeout of the half. They could have used those on defense after stopping the Dolphins if they had and gotten the ball back. Instead, they used it there when they were going to punt anyway. If you don't know what's going to go on, just take the penalty and kick from the 44. But I want to end on that complaint when I look at the game. I think I was just really pleased with, you know, how they responded the whole game, how they, you know, kept up that intensity from beginning to end. So the Dolphins, by the time the Dolphins just gradually faded, that third quarter Bills touchdown just killed them. They never got close to scoring again, save the last garbage drive then with the McKelvin interception. So very pleased to see us beat the Dolphins 29-10. just like in the 92 AFC title game in Miami.
Paul, our resident historian, always good for a historic score or comparison or useless fact or dead Bills trivia.
Or all of the above. Although I don't think there were some dead Bills in that game, like Kent Hull. But you know,
well, they were living then. But
they were alive.
Right. But you know what Scott's good at? Scott from the Great Wisconsin Hockey School. He's good at three stars. So why don't you give us a three stars if there's an honorable mention? I know one that better be on there that I don't know that you're going to have on there.
I think there's a good chance that I will, okay, because as regular listeners to the podcast know, I do try and, you know, sometimes I'll get a little wacky, you know, maybe, but you know, I normally try and play it straight with my three stars, three actual players, no coaches, no units. I have done that in the past, but I you know, it's kind of a special occasion. You know what?
What?
Going 2-0.
Yeah.
Bill staying in Buffalo.
Yeah.
Jim Kelly cancer free.
Yeah.
Beating the Dolphins at home.
Yeah.
Let's get a little wacky.
Okay.
I have nine stars tonight.
Nine stars. Whoa. Well, then I feel like
if I don't have yours,
I feel like I need to cut this segment right now.
Yeah. Madonna has to re-record her song and be like, "You can be one of nine lucky stars."
Right. I have to remind Scott that this only is you can only hang out for 8 hours on Google.
Got it. Okay. So I'm doing them quick. Okay. And there's a theme within the stars. I will ask you to hold your comments to the end in order to go through them as quickly as possible. So third star. So there's no honorable mentions because there's nine stars.
Is it the 10th person right? Okay.
The rest of the Bills is the honorable mention.
Okay,
third star, Dan Carpenter, 5 of 6 on field goals. Preston Brown, also a third star, 13 tackles with yeoman's work for filling in for Keith Rivers and played 100% in the snaps 2 weeks in a row, as well as also a third star, E.J. Manuel, 16 of 26 for 202 yards, one touchdown, no picks and no sacks, no huge mistakes, and yay, E.J. Second stars, Corey Graham, 10 tackles, 3 passes defense, which, as I referenced before, is 6 for him and first in the league. Anthony Dixon with a huge punt block. And Chantrell Henderson, who pitched a shutout against Cameron Wake. Good for them, good for the rest of the offensive line. Again, he did not do it alone, but he did a great job. And your first stars, Sammy Watkins, 8 catches for 117 yards and a touchdown. C.J. Spiller, 12 rushes for 69 yards, 1 catch for 9, and 102-yard kickoff return for a touchdown, and Kyle Williams, 4 tackles and a sack, as well as the centerpiece of the Bills' defense. And I say you can give him a first star every time we win and don't give up more than 10 points, which I think speaks to Kyle Williams. So those are your nine stars.
All right.
One offensive, one defensive, and one special team star in each of those categories.
I like it. Yeah. I like
it. I also had my third star as E.J. Carp Brown, so I think that works out well. You know, and no one, and Corey Dixonerson played a great game, so you can't neglect that. And then having Sammy Spilliams, I think they all did great on Sunday.
Sammy Spilliams.
Yeah, very nice. Everybody had a good moment. It was a good.
It was the bad.
It was a good game.
It was good. It was fun. The only bad things, red zone. You know, you don't know about how the Dolphins were going to be with Marino the whole game. And that's about it. Oh, the punt. They had a punt.
Let me ask you, how good do you think the Buffalo Bills are? If you could rank them from 1 to 32. I'm going to ask Paul first.
All right.
I'm out of breath.
Let's say we were trying to determine the most powerful teams in the National Football League, and we ranked them according to their power levels. A power ranking, if you will.
Okay, I was going to say a ranking power, but that even sounds better.
Okay, we're going to do our ranking powers today. where do you think is a reasonable place to put the Buffalo Bills out of 32 teams?
Reasonably? I mean, I think we don't want to overreact to the record. We also don't want to overreact to what happened in 08 and 2011, where they got off to a hot start and then fizzled. I still think they're kind of middle-of-the-road team, so I'm going to put them right smack dab in the middle at 16.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's hard for me to not put him in the top 16, given there are plenty of teams that are 0-2. But I agree with Paul. I would put them in the lower kind of quadrant of the 16, just because, you know, it's to be determined how the season goes. And, you know, sneaking up on the Bears week one is good, and obviously the Bears beat the Niners on Sunday night, so the Bears are not bad. They're clearly capable of beating a good team. But, yeah, I'd put him in at I don't know, like 13 or 14, not knowing any of the other teams.
Okay, yeah. No, I'm kind of with you guys. I kind of feel like maybe even a little higher, like 11 or 12. But, you know, definitely not in a top 10, sort of a – and as you say, like, it's week two. So there's a lot of 0-2 teams, but there's also a lot of volatility. Like, there, you probably got to wait till, you know, a month or two before
– Seattle is also 1-1. So exactly. It's kind of like, yeah, Seattle's probably better than us, still.
Right, and Indianapolis is 0-2. I don't know that I would think that Indianapolis isn't a better football team than Buffalo. Or at least,
it's a debate, at least.
Right, it's kind of, you know, like, I would sort of – anyway. Well, depending on who you go to, ESPN has them at a respectable 12th. I think that's pretty fair. I don't have the CBS page up.
Behind the Bears.
Yes, it's Bears at 1-1.
Which is slightly
and
odd.
And the Bills who beat
Although that's so tough to rank because the Bears did just go on the road and beat the 49ers.
Right.
So, you know, it's tough
but
to...
But last week they had the Bears at 18th and the Bills at 23rd. So they were, you know, it's sort of... I guess they're sort of saying they're about even, that in a, you know, that they would... And then the Chargers are 10th. So they're saying the Chargers are right in there with Buffalo. So that's good to know. And Houston is 14th. I don't have the CBS ones in front of me, but I'm told that they were ranked 9th on CBS. Let me see.
Peter King had them as 10th in his fine 15.
Well, Peter King, I don't like because he...
He sells his soul for the NFL?
Yeah, well, the whole thing in Ray Rice where he basically admitted to making up a quote and didn't... He was like, yeah, I was told by a really good source that they were pretty sure that they...
It's artistic license.
Yes,
come on.
It's not when you're making a quote. He's a... I really, like, if he was an actual run fired, that's like the worst thing you can do as a reporter. The Washington Post. Neil Greenberg of the Washington Post, who I hasten to remind listeners or inform listeners, got his start as a hockey advanced stats writer for the Post. He was the advanced stats writer guy. And then now he has this thing called Fancy Stats Blog where he writes stuff. It's not always great. He definitely runs with a little bit of – his thing is he runs with a little bit of data and then makes bold predictions. So he's really not that different from any other person. Paul, would you care to venture a guess as to where Neil Greenberg has placed the Buffalo Bills?
It's going to be real high, real low. 24.
Ooh, you should have gone the other way.
Damn.
He has them third.
Whoa.
Here's his rankings. Carolina Panthers 1, Cincinnati Bengals 2, Buffalo Bills 3. So he went with all the 2-0 teams. And then I think Houston is 4. Chicago is 5, and then Arizona is down at 7 as the last 2-0 team. His reasoning, and I found this via Buffalo Rumblings, and I felt compelled to actually make my first comment on there in a while and give everyone the background on Neil Greenberg. How does a team jump from 26th to 3rd overall in 1 week? Quality wins and small sample size. The Bills have won over the Chicago Bears and Miami Dolphins. Those teams have wins over San Francisco and New England, respectively, making the Bills appear way above average. Do I expect Buffalo to be the best team in the league after all 16 games are played? No, but for now they're 2-0 with a plus 22-point differential. So he's sort of admitting that it's weird. He's admitting that his data sample is flawed, but not really adjusting for it.
Well, this is as college football fans know, this is one of the problems with the BCS rankings and relying on the computers, was that especially with small sample sizes, they would come up with wild things like, you know, like Tulane was ahead of LSU or,
right.
You know, USC was behind, you know, South Carolina or whoever was bad that year. So it happens with these small sample sizes, and it's kind of – that's why they didn't release the BCS rankings until like week 7 or 8. So there was at least some sense of a small sample size that you could start basing those matches off. And so I understand the value of doing things, of having computer-assisted rankings and having them tell you – come up with interesting correlations and patterns and being able to write interesting things about them. But yes, it does seem rather foolish to kind of just undercut your whole argument in the middle of making it.
Okay. So I wanted to say that. That was a weird.
It was interesting to see the Bills be on so many. It was very interesting, and I don't know how much we wanted to go into the Ray Rice, Adrian Peterson stuff because we did it a little bit last week. But obviously, like, and Peter King was very guilty of this, was this, like, look at the Bills, you know, with all this trauma going around in the NFL and all these bad news stories. This is what football is about. This is why it's important, and it's and over it's narrative. And it's yeah, and it's kind of like, you know. One rich guy bought a franchise from another rich guy, a dead rich guy, you know, who was a good person, which is fine. And a team won a football game.
Right.
Like, it doesn't, I don't want to.
He had a few guys suspended for things like marijuana and
yeah,
other things.
Yeah, so. And Jim Kelly, you know, is a good guy, but he was a jerk on many occasions. I don't think he hit his wife. I don't think he hits anybody, so he's right. Not that big of a jerk. But, you know, he probably was mean to some people. And it's like, these things don't really have much in common.
Right.
These things go on in the real world. They go on in football. All of our lives continue to advance, you know, and it's, to a certain extent, it's a little kind of trying to save the NFL's butt, which if you're someone who writes on the NFL for a living, you are interested in saving the NFL's butt because yeah. If you're doing that, you're not writing about European soccer, where I'm sure there are other people who beat their wives and children.
It's just, it's a fact of life that there are good and bad people everywhere.
Yes.
And so let's not
it's not
have big broad strokes.
Yeah.
Well, or at least let's not have Peter King write the big broad strokes because he doesn't really.
Someone with a little more credibility might
yeah,
help.
Yeah, right, or someone who knows the teams a little bit better. Okay, so that was the power rankings, which I think are ridiculous, and I just wanted to highlight them. Terry Pegula is expected to finish his purchase of the Buffalo Bills on Wednesday, tomorrow, and he's going to buy them cash. This article comes from WGRZ. There's going to be a $1.4 billion wire transfer. So that is sort of evidence that there's no such thing as real money anymore. Because there's no room somewhere with $1.4 billion sitting in it. Not to sound like a libertarian, like Tea Party, and if you are into that, that's great. But not to sound like that, because I don't want to sound like that. But like, there is something to say that there's nothing really backing this transaction other than we all agree Terry Pegula has earned this much money, and he is now telling them.
There's a computer screen somewhere that says that. And right, it says that he has $1.4 billion.
Yes, and they're giving it to another human group of human beings.
If anyone, any listeners have ever seen the movie The Invention of Line, I'm reminded of a scene early in the movie where Ricky Gervais goes into the bank, asks to withdraw $500 and something like that, and they say, oh, I'm sorry, it looks like there's only 40 in your account unless you feel this is an error. And it, for the first time, that is the moment where Ricky Gervais invents Line. He goes, actually, yes, I think I do have $1,000 in there. And the teller goes, okay, great, here's your $500.
Yeah, so the premise of the movie is that no one can lie.
Right.
It's never been invented, and he's the first person to do it. Excellent movie. It's not as funny as it should be, but I really like the movie, if that makes sense.
It was a fairly decent movie.
Yeah, there were some really funny parts, and then there were some like really clever parts, but it didn't make me laugh the whole way through.
Right.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I have fond memories, though, because it was like I was Snowmageddon, and I had not taken, which was in D.C.,
right.
For all our Buffalo listeners and listeners across the globe, literally.
Right.
We had a bad snowstorm that snowed us in. I invited someone who I'd chatted with in the building before, like, hey, you want to come over? I'll order a movie off of the cable system, and we'll watch it. Like, sure. So $4.95, sat down, drank some wine, watched the movie. It was like a Monday night,
yeah.
So that was enjoyable. So positive memories.
Just a couple of bros watching a movie. It's cool.
Yep.
He cut out in the middle there, so yeah. I could only assume what went on in there.
Yep, lots of terrible sexual.
Oh, really? I cut out. Yeah, you missed all the hot and heavy stuff then. Sorry.
Yeah.
I would recommend it if you're into movies that are funny but are a little heavy-handed.
Sure.
I think it's certainly worth a free Netflix rental. Absolutely.
Yeah. I was going to ask, Paul, if you had $1.4 billion, what would you do with it?
Would you buy us better audio equipment? You were
looking for a house. Would you build a house out of the $1.4 billion if you got it in, like, nickels and dimes? Like, that would be a pretty big house.
I would actually buy zebra cakes with the $1.4 billion and make my house out of that, and I would make it so large that I could eat zebra cakes for the rest of my God-given life and still have plenty of house plenty of roof left over my head. Plenty of delicious zebra cake roof over my head.
If I had $1.4 billion, I would probably lose it all at the track.
No, I think the question is, if you were going to spend $1.4 billion on building a house out of something, what would you build it out of?
Oh.
I mean, the track is an interesting kind of idea. I think it would be fun to go lose it all on football games myself.
Right.
But, you know, I think it's more interesting. I think it tells us, this is like one of those, James Lipton questions. It's like, what do you see? What do you want God to say when he sees you?
Okay, so I can't answer the question of what I'd build the house out of.
Can't.
But what I can tell you is I have a story about a friend and I who talked about this.
Okay.
And he was mad because when I told him what I wanted to do with my lottery winnings when I won them, which I didn't really win them, but I wanted to win them, was like, you know, buy season tickets to everything and like have a private plane to take me to like all my sporting events and like, you know, just like have like six places to live. And
sure.
He's like, you are a terrible rich person. You don't know what it is to have F you money or fuck you money.
Sure.
And he said, fuck you money is you don't get like season tickets behind the plate to your favorite baseball team. He's like, you move to an island and you buy a 300-inch television because you own the island and you put it in your window and you watch that. And no one ever has to ever be near you. He's like, right. So the idea he finally approved was what I would do is I would, on my island that I would own, I would pay local athletes to reenact every baseball game that I wanted to watch for me. And so it'd be like, I wouldn't watch the Nats game, but they would find out the score. And the next morning I would wake up
the box score.
Breakfast, they would reenact play for play the game for me each day at my own place, and I would just like be able to watch it and be happy.
Did at any point in this conversation did the prospect of you don't actually you don't do the recreation by the natives, which I like, but you spend money to buy season tickets behind home plate or whatever, but then you also buy out that entire section and give them to no one.
Right.
I think that's how I would roll, because then that really kind of shows off, yeah, I'm the boss. Yeah. Right. No, you can't sit here. These are my seats.
That's kind of true.
I feel like that would be the most ostentatious.
I don't know if I would do that all the time, but I think maybe you would do it for one game and you would buy every ticket.
The entire stadium.
Every ticket, and you would just not let anyone else in, and it would just be you. And I would sit like up in the 400s just to be an asshole.
Just boo.
Boo everybody. Right. You know, I would buy like all the tickets to like a Pittsburgh Cincinnati game and just boo them all.
And then just helicopter out on your private
on
your private helicopter. Okay. Anyway, this was fun.
Yeah. The point is we're terrible people and should never be given lots of money.
That's maybe one lesson you should pull from this podcast.
Maybe next rich asshole. That's what we do have a injury, pardon, I'm burping as I try and read about the inside linebacker stuff. Larry Dean will be replacing Jonathan Meeks. Inside linebacker, is that right?
No, he's a safety, Meeks.
Why am I saying that? Oh, Larry Dean's the linebacker. Right, Larry Dean is a linebacker. That's what I'm sort of... Yeah, so Meeks has a neck injury, but it's expected to take 12 weeks, which puts him on IR, and then they're adding Larry Dean to the mix. So Dean is a fourth-year pro out of Valdosta State, and he has played with the Minnesota Vikings.
Did you just make up a college, by the way?
Valdosta State.
No, he did not. At least not. I don't think he did. And it says known for his special teams work, which I think is kind of the point of Jonathan Meeks at this point. And I'm a little disappointed that his name's not Larry Tate, because I feel like that would be enjoyable if Darren Stevens' boss was on the Bills and played special teams.
That's pretty good. Okay.
It's a deep pull.
That's what you said. What was that? Oh, you tried to show me something. Do you want to read some
listener? Yeah, we have some listener questions.
Right. So we're kind of done with the news. That was kind of it. It was a huge news last week, and now we're gonna do some listener stuff, and then go to.
Well, yeah, because
if we're doing listener questions, can I go grab some nuts off the counter there and eat them while Scott fields them? I asked that question, but really I'm going to do it right now and come back.
All right, so. Just go get some nuts and come back.
I only have the ones, so just do it quick.
I'm going to read some of the other comments.
Okay, you can read some of the other ones then.
Paul's going to
go
grab his nuts.
We have a first-time, long-time, which is very important because we love all of our listeners, but we especially love people who have been silently stalking us for years.
I feel like you've established you don't love any of our listeners.
Well, yes, I like that they've chimed in, so now I can know that I don't like you. And I don't like you. Riza, I'm sorry if I don't know exactly how to pronounce your name, but I'll say Riza. And he says, hey there, great job with the podcast. Been a listener for a couple of years. Do you think it'd be a good idea to bench Sam Watkins for a week and let him heal a bit? Hmm. Not sure if another week is enough time, but it's not easy watching him cringe in pain walking to the sideline after every play. Even minor hits seem to bother him. This is something that I definitely did notice on Sunday. I think it was rather apparent that he was coming out on a regular basis to just take a blow, and it was a play or two, and then he would go back in. But it would always look like he was getting up like he, you know, was in a 12-round fight or something. And I don't know. I think the biggest issue with any of these kind of – with any injury is a couple things. Is chance of permanent damage. The second is chance of further injury and health of the player. And then the third thing is kind of pain threshold. So if this – my understanding is that Sam's got the ribs. He's got ribs, as Al Michaels would say. He's out, he's out with ribs.
He's got some ribs.
That was a Chan Gailey thing too. Yeah, he's got a rib.
He's got a rib, actually. He's got a rib. So the issue there – so I'm not a doctor. I will not pretend to be one. You do not want me operating on you.
No.
But that does not stop me from speculating about medical issues, which is very important. So I will say that because it's a rib, there's not much you can do other than just not get hit in the ribs. But given that he's a football player, that's going to continue to happen.
Right.
And I think they've already decided that there's little to no chance that they're going to bench him for an extended period.
Right.
And that the risk of re-injury from that kind of thing is, if it's just kind of a weird kind of green stick fracture where there's not like literally like a compound fracture and it's poking out of his chest or anything, they're not going, you know, there's not a huge chance that he's going to be injured any further. So it might just be one of these pain things, and he's unfortunately just going to have to suck it up until it heals. Because unfortunately, like, this would be a great time for the bye week, but the bye week's end of October, and I'm sure the rib will have either been broken or completely healed or not a huge issue anymore by then.
Ribs, given their central location, are one of those things that you can't just – all you have is rest to heal them. But kind of as you say, like, it's also a matter of, like, you got to get up, you got to move around, you got to walk around anyway, so it's just a matter of not getting hit in the ribs, which means, you know, EJ should probably try not throwing them really
hang him out to dry, which he definitely did at least
jump
twice.
Up and catch, and then he gets, like, tackled in the middle.
Yeah, EJ's got to bring down his throws is one thing I've noticed. Get them to, sorry, that was a great noise. You know, get them more to the receiver's chest than, you know, 4 feet above his head. So hopefully he works on that and he doesn't start laying his guys out to dry.
But if the ribs are just bruised and they're not broken yet, then I don't know that there's a difference. I think it's just a matter of...
Then it's the flak jacket and you're a football player.
Right.
And I think Sammy understands that. That's why he's keep going out there.
Yeah. And he had a great day. He certainly, you know, looked in pain, as Steven pointed out on the Facebook page, who has been a critic of the Watkins pick. And he goes out of his way to say that more games like this will steer him to the fold of Watkins as a good pick. Certainly, if they keep winning, that'll help too. The fact that they're like bigger to my mind is that as long as EJ keeps being a decent quarterback and develops, that'll be more actually telling on this year's first year round pick.
Yeah, Sammy had more plays of 20 plus yards on Sunday than Stevie Johnson did in 2013. Mm-hmm. So,
and as much as I like EJ's development, I think EJ does tend to get – I don't think he gets locked on one receiver, but I think he will get locked on a receiver per game. And, like, a couple – like, the Chicago game, I think it was Robert Woods he was looking for. I think this game it was Sammy Watkins he was looking for. And I don't know if that's based off of matchups or if it's just – it's the first guy who caught a pass and did something good with it or what exactly it is, but I'm not sure. He just says he is going through the progressions and that kind of thing. But that's also one of those things where it's difficult to say, like, oh, well, yeah, I looked at you know, Mike Williams for a second. He wasn't open.
Right.
And then I spent 4 seconds looking for Sammy Watkins. So it's you know, I don't know what's going through his head, so we'll never really know exactly what he was doing. But it does end up looking like he's locking in on one receiver.
We also have a comment on the blog for the first time in a while from Matthew. says he enjoys the podcast, and he's happy that we're doing it, but we have to fix the microphones, which we think by doing this way will help, because it wasn't an actual problem. It was a running three different pieces of software at once problem on my MacBook. So hopefully this kind of fixes it. Used to be able to just do it all in GarageBand, but then they changed GarageBand, which is really annoying. But apparently there's no more Wide Right Radio or Buffalo Bills Review, which I didn't realize. When we started doing this podcast, I stopped listening to other Bills podcasts because I didn't want to copy them. And I didn't want to accidentally hear something I would...
I don't want to listen to people that are stupider than me.
And yet you hang out with Paul and yet
I hang out
well,
with
you. Well, you know, but I'm not saying much. I'm just sitting here eating my mixed nuts.
Just putting nuts in your mouth. That's all right. Yep.
Paul, do you have any... Stephen left us a couple comments. Do you want to pick out one or two?
I'll address one of them, actually. On the comment, too, about the microphones as well. I mean, within a month, I will also be on a much more highly operational computer, so that might help on this end, too. So just something to keep in mind. But, all right, I think I've chewed most of these nuts. So when you talk about nuts. The turning point in the game being Buffalo's first real drive in the third quarter, I would totally agree with that. We talked about that before. He says the Bills' defense has been on the field for about 4 days, must have been exhausted. I will say the one good thing about that is many of the defenders who were in on that drive were the backups, which could have made it why it was so easy for Miami to move the ball. Great day for Watkins. He references that. And he's been right about Corey Graham. I mean, he probably has been the most valuable player through two games, and Scott alluded to that earlier. Just looking at the results so far, I think it's hard to say that any Bill has been better than Corey Graham so far this year. So definitely agree on that. And also thinking about some of the Twitter comments, we talked, granted, mentioned about Watkins hanging tough and being in pain, which we just went through, and it's something he will have to play through until the medical staff says, you know, this is inhibiting to you, you can't do this. Now I'm running out of momentum here.
Yeah, you're just rolling to a stop.
Just going down fast. But also, Grant pointed out that EJ made some nice throws under pressure. He did that the first game, too, so while we agree he was not perfect, his role lately has been more of game management. Good signs that by week 14, the question won't be whether or not Manuel can operate as a franchise quarterback, but whether or not he can keep up what he's been doing with consistency to be the guy. So that's my feedback on the social media aspect.
Very nice. Well, that was nice getting caught up with all of our fans.
Yes, it was.
So if you comment on our Facebook or tweet us or anything, you're probably going to get mentioned in the show. And Chris Reed, who's great, who wants us to make the St. Doug Marone shirts.
Oh, yeah, that's true. We do. We probably should get on that.
I'll see if I can do that this week.
Okay.
I'll see if I can learn Photoshop in a week. That seems possible. Paul, what happened this day in Bill's history?
That is an excellent question. I should have reach for that nut right when
you should swallow more nuts and then keep talking.
It is.
Can you put all of the nuts in your mouth while you do Bill's history?
And by the way, for fans who think I'm being dirty, you can see, as I held up earlier, these are actual mixed nuts, and they are actually delicious. So it's the benefit of having video this week. So as I mentioned to Frank last week and our listeners, and Scott, who was technically a listener last week, though he was a written participant in the podcast, I'm going to stick with the 1988 season until the Bills actually lose a game.
Don't change. If it's not broke, don't fix it.
So we're going to go back to our Wayback Machine to 1988, Week 3, Buffalo Bills, New England Patriots. This was an interesting matchup. The Patriots were coming into this game, 1-1 record, beat the Jets, lost to a very good Minnesota Vikings team on the road. The Bills had beaten that Vikings team at home week one, a Vikings team that went on to finish 11-5, and then proceeded to beat the Miami Dolphins in week two, the Dan Marino-led Miami Dolphins in week two. And the Dolphins, they had their worst year under Marino. It was a 6-10 season, but they still beat him. So we're going to week three now. The Patriots under Coach Raymond Berry playing against the Bills. And just like the previous week, the hero of the game, as I'm looking at the wrong. No, it's all right. I found the right one. Hero of the game, kicker Scott Norwood. Yes. Bills were trailing in this one going into the second half, 14-3, led by the mighty Steve Grogan. It seemed the New England Patriots would be unstoppable. And the late John Stevens, who was rookie of the year that year for the Patriots, running for 81 yards, ton of that in the first half. So there's your dead player reference, though not a Bill. So the Bills go into the second half, down 14-3. And they're like, you know what, we'll do one touchdown in here, but we're going to live on field goals. Norwood, a 44-yarder in the third quarter, and then a 41-yarder in the fourth quarter with less than a minute on the clock to win this one for Buffalo. He earned a lot of high praise for this game. This was one game that was frequently referenced why Norwood made the Pro Bowl that season. Mm-hmm. Just a pillar of consistency. Jim Kelly, not the pillar of consistency that day. 21 of 33, 170, a touchdown, but also two picks. Thurman Thomas, his first game as the Bills' leading rusher with 17 carries for 55 yards. Again, not world beaters. You saw what really did it for the Bills back then was defense. Sounds like we're talking about 2014. But in 88, it was sacks by Cornelius Bennett, Ray Bentley, Jeff Wright, a shared sack by Daryl Talley and Shane Conlin. The interceptions by Mark Kelso and Nate Odoms, some good returning, some good kick coverage, won this game for Buffalo. So again, just drawing the parallels between 1988 and the 2014 Bills. Hopefully Buffalo keeps us up and we can just do 1988 the whole season. But on this day in 1988, it was the Buffalo Bills 16 and the New England Patriots 14.
I think the takeaway is that E.J. Manuel has played at least one game where he played better than Jim Kelly.
I think that's the only thing that you can think of. I think that's the only logical conclusion.
No, was there a trivia question that Scott could try and guess at associated with this game or no?
Yeah, I could probably make one up here on the spot.
Yeah, go
well,
ahead.
Well, I was going to ask Frank, how long do we keep going with the 1988 season before you and me start doing this as if we were in 1988? Like we start growing our hair out, we start bringing in some torn jeans, you know, like we have like a Van Halen intro for the pod, like. I mean,
as we'll jump.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like if 1988 is the spirit guide for this 2014 Bills season, I feel like we should get into the mood.
Nintendo Entertainment System. Play some Zelda original.
Yeah.
Zelda.
Yeah.
I was more of an Adventure of Link guy, for the record, but
you like that one better? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'm in the minority, I know, but what can I say?
I would say playing it. I was glad they tried something different anyway. But I don't know that I liked it better than the original. It definitely was cool. I don't know. The whole shadow fight at the end kind of pissed me off. But
I was surprised that was the conclusion. I was surprised, yeah. Like, I beat the guy, and then I'm like, all right, what's next? You had to beat the boss before that with the spinning heads. You had
right.
to use thunder and fire and shield and jump and all those magic powers. But anyway, all right, the trivia question.
Good, because I have a Nintendo question for the two of you if you need another second with the trivia question.
No, I'm good with trivia, but actually, no, I'll ask your Nintendo one first, because
I think
I'm less likely to forget the trivia question because it's right in front of me.
I think I asked Scott this on Sunday, but how did before the internet we all know things about like the Contra code, up, up, down, down, left, right, BA, start? There was no internet to tell me that.
It was a Nintendo magazine.
There was, but how did we? Enough of us have Nintendo Magazine to I didn't see that in Nintendo Magazine.
Right.
Someone told me that, and I was like, really? And you tried it, or like, oh yeah, to like, there's this one part in Castlevania 2 where you have to like kneel next to the wall for like an ungodly like 35 seconds before like something comes and takes you away, and it happens.
Yeah, and it's a tornado. The tornado comes and swirls you away.
Right, and something like that happens, and like right, and no one tells you that. It's just in the game. It's just like someone was like, oh, yeah, it's really weird you have to do that. And it's like, how the shit did you know? I think there's something like that in Adventures of Link or Zelda, too, where it's just like, you know. And now, because now when I play a video game and I get frustrated, it's like I go to YouTube and someone's just like done it for me. And I'm like, okay, great. Like, because I just no longer give a shit to like upset myself the way that I probably did when I was 12. I'm just like, this is
not worth my time.
Right.
And I'm playing this for fun.
Right. And then but anyway, so that's just, you don't have to answer that if you don't want, Paul. It's just maybe a thought for our listeners.
Yeah, I think it's probably largely word of mouth. I do remember looking at some Nintendo guides
Word of mouth is pretty amazing.
Sometimes it was having a sounding board. My sister was not a big video game player, but I remember specifically when you brought up Castlevania 2, I'd gotten the crystals or stones, whatever it was, from the thing, or the Dracula's body parts, that's what it was. So I'd gotten his body parts, and I'm like, I just need to go to the last castle, and I can't find it. I've scrolled through the whole board. And she mentioned on the scene where the hurricane takes you away that I was going to the left. She's like, have you tried going right? I'm like, oh, I guess not. I didn't even think to go right because the character was facing left, Simon Belmont. So I turned right, and sure enough, Dracula's Castle was down a few screens. So
I think
some of it's having a sounding board, too. It helps.
I got to call the Nintendo helpline once. My parents were like, you can spend the dollar a minute or whatever. And literally the guy's help was, oh, yeah, when you're fighting Mike Tyson, you have to dodge right, not left. And I'm like, I hate you that you just made money to tell me that. Anyway, what's the trivia question? And then we'll get to the San Diego Bills game and we'll get the hell out of here.
All right. In this game against the New England Patriots and throughout the 1988 season, what Bill, whose career would end within the year, was the primary kick and punt returner?
So he ended in 1988. I think, yes, as always...
Well, Trigger ended in 1989 when he played 9 games for 2 teams.
Okay. I think, as always, I should...
And it ended with New England, for the record.
He ended playing with New England.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I think, as always, I should defer to Scott first, because he usually has the better guest.
I think this one, you know, sometimes Paul has good ones, sometimes Paul has bad ones. This one is a good one. Because there's actually two guys by the same name.
Oh, really?
And so I'm going to say the answer is Lenny Kravitz.
Right.
And you would think that I'm talking about Lenny Kravitz, the rock and roll singer.
Yeah.
Because he's, you know, he's American woman. But I'm not.
Oh.
Because Lenny Kravitz's uncle was also named Lenny Kravitz. And Lenny Kravitz was a Korean War veteran and won the Medal of Honor for conspicuous gallantry in the Korean War. Then he went on to be a punt returner for the Bills, and then it landed his career in New England. So that is the, in fact, correct answer.
I'd like to thank him for his service.
Leonard M. Kravitz.
Yep, that I can't argue fact. I mean, that is correct. I will note the one qualification there is before he was known as Lenny Kravitz, his name was Errol Tucker, so that was what it said on his Bills uniform. But yes, that is the correct answer.
Chris Tucker's uncle, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, exactly. It's surprising how small the world is sometimes.
So the Buffalo Bills are favored to win this football game right now, by the slimmest of margins. But they're
the Bills are favored to beat the team that just beat the Seahawks last week. Is what
it
you
says
heard.
Buffalo -1, which means that Buffalo's giving up a point, right? I'm reading.
Yep,
that
that's correct.
Yes.
They have Buffalo. Apparently, Odd Sharks also has power rankings. They have Buffalo at 13 and San Diego 11. And given these people make their money off of this, I'm going to trust that. That seems a little more right to me. It seems like they're pretty equal teams. And you got San Diego, as we talked about the last 2 weeks, coming all the way east. They've never really played very well east. Maybe it helps the Bills, that they're coming off a really big win against Seattle. They're feeling their oats, and now they've got to come all the way to, you know, backwater little Buffalo from the sunny shores of San Diego. And
I'm a little surprised that the line is where it is, to be perfectly honest.
It's a little
strange.
I'm looking
because right at it. Because it seems, honestly, like the Vegas people, I mean, again, they're smarter than me, so I'm probably dead wrong about this whole my whole way of thinking. But as you said, the Vegas people were one of the first people to on to the West Coast team traveling east for a 1 o'clock game theory. They know that San Diego basically had the odds of you making the playoffs when you're 0-2, and San Diego was not a great team last year. They were 1-1 to start the season. They ended up basically skating into the playoffs by beating Denver at Denver and then going on to beat Cincinnati, I believe, in Cincinnati, and getting actually fairly far. So I think that's...
They actually lost to Cincinnati, sorry. Was just a fact check.
Thank you.
No problem. But they won the last 4 games.
Yes, they went on a streak, and I think there's a lot of holdover from that. And I would expect that Vegas would be a little smart and understand that you have the West Coast, East Coast thing. You have them basically playing for their whole season last week at home against Seattle, and that was a good win, definitely. But you also have them losing Ryan Matthews. You know, their whole team is kind of built around this West Coast, You know, quick passing offense.
Gates, strangely, I think you're about to say that the line should be bigger, that Buffalo should be a bigger favorite.
That is what I'm saying. I'm saying Buffalo should be a bigger favorite. I'm a little confused as to... I mean, obviously, the Vegas people are trying to get both sides of the money on the right side. And I think there's probably still people who don't quite trust Buffalo. Obviously, in general, I do not trust Buffalo. I'm still not backing off of the 6-10 prediction for the season.
Right.
But at the same time, I do think that we're going
to
win this
game.
Well,
to be looking at their website, it appears that most people are betting the Bills, 56-44%. So that's, I don't know. And then, but the over-under is 44 points, and that most people are going to say that there's more than 44 points scored, which seems reasonable to me. I mean, San Diego's still a dangerous team. They still have a good defense. They still have some weapons on offense without Ryan Matthews.
It is a playoff team from last year.
It's a game, however, that we all pretty much agreed was a trap game for the Chargers, that the Bills could beat the Chargers, even when we were all saying they were going to go 4-12. And for the record, I am sticking with 4-12 because so far 4-12 has netted a 2-0 victory. When the Bills get their fifth win, I'm going to pick them to go 4-12. The last time Buffalo beat San Diego in Buffalo was the blackout game where...
Right, we were at the bar and we were watching random games on TV, and then when the game finally came back on, they didn't have a first down line, they didn't have announcers, they didn't have a clock in the corner, so right. the cameraman would pan up to the scoreboard that had the time on in the quarter, so you knew what quarter it was and how much time was left.
Amazing. It was crazy, and then I think that was at the dawn of Twitter or Facebook, where I was kind of getting a few updates from the internet as to what was going on. Because we didn't really know very much other than there was a power outage.
It was a balloon, I believe, that actually caused it, if I remember.
Yeah, it was a balloon, one of those weather balloons that went into like a electrical thing, and it blew up Buffalo's power.
Weather balloons. They don't exist.
UFO.
Yeah, thank you.
Hit a power pole.
Absolutely.
Because they were drunk.
By the way, it was hilarious, Frank. You probably don't even realize this. We've had no mic issues today, except when you were talking about electrical issues. And I'm like, electrical. It was, you will have to go back and see that, because that was like perfect timing.
Excellent. That's how we planned it. I pushed the, Google Hangouts has a irony button where you push it and it does something ironic. So I'm not going to push it again, though.
So. Yeah, it's dangerous. Paul, do you have thoughts about the Chargers-Bills game?
Yeah, you should push your thoughts and your score and your prediction. And then,
I don't know what to pick for this game, to be honest with you.
Well,
because
too bad, you have to.
I know. I mean, I picked them to lose twice, and they've won both games, so I'm tempted to pick them to lose a third time, which, against a very good Chargers team, coming off a playoff season, coming off a victory last week over the dominant Super Bowl champion Seattle Seahawks. I'm tempted to pick the loss again, but I think I'm going to say the Bills take this one with their defense. I think it's going to be a close one. I say 27-24.
Okay. No, I mean, I'm not saying that the Bills can't lose this game. I think there's definitely the San Diego theory of victory is, you know, they protect Rivers pretty well. No one can cover Gates for, you know, more than 10 or, you know, 4 or 5 seconds. Keenan Allen's still pretty good. They're not super reliant on the running game anyway. Matthews had a decent year last year, but, you know, it's not like Adrian Peterson or LeSean McCoy going out. So I could see San Diego winning. I just think that there's too many factors stacked against them. I think it is a bit of a letdown game. I think the Bills are riding that wave of emotion still. So I think they'll still play well. Now, if they get hit in the mouth, things might change. But as it is, I'd say I'm okay giving this a solid Bills victory. I could see it being, you know, 27-17 even.
I think the Bills are going to win 14. I think it's going to be something lower scoring. I think there's enough tape on the offense now, 2 weeks, and you see how guys like EJ Manuel play and what the Bills are trying to do against certain defenses, that defenses can start to plan for that. And so I think that San Diego is going to have an advantage that Chicago and Miami didn't have. And I think on both sides of the ball, that's the case. That said, there's still something to be said for the whole going west thing and the fact that they're not having Ryan Matthews, and Buffalo's going to be in the same position with San Diego. San Diego, to me, is a team that...
Although they are probably going to go east if they went west.
Correct.
Buffalo. I apologize. That's a long freaking road trip right there if they go west.
Yeah, that's a pretty... You know what? Yes.
maybe, they could do it. I mean, you might not be wrong.
We'll work on geography.
It's
on
the
our,
great circle
maybe
route.
Next globe, right?
Yeah.
So I think that I picked on the win originally. I guess I'm a little worried as to, like, someone's going to have a letdown game, right? San Diego's going to either be let down after a big win against Seattle, or Buffalo's going to let down after 2-0.
Or we could have just a phenomenal game on both sides.
It could. It could be a great game. And you know
and
what?
A tie.
18-14, and it could be. It could be a phenomenal game depending on how the defenses play. So part of me is like it could go 18-14. Part of me is like it could go 34-31. I don't know which favors the Bills. I'm still picking the Bills, though. I'm not going to change my vote now. I'm all in. So this is the third of fourth wins that the Buffalo Bills are going to get this year.
Okay.
We've all picked the Bills for the first time this season. Obviously, yep. It's the first time I picked the team, period.
And therefore, the jinx is in full effect.
Yes. Well, yep. We've tried. This is the only thing we haven't really done is we've done week one, we were all wrong because we picked against them. Week two, we split, which was the first time we knew someone was going to be right and someone was going to be wrong. And then this week, we're all going to be right and wrong again, but the other way.
Yeah, exactly. So it'll be Frank and Scott in the lead next week in the yearly picks contest. We really ought to have some sort of, like, whoever has the best picks at the end of the season should really, you know, have some sort of...
Yeah, that would involve, like, keeping track of things.
I mean, we could start out. I, for example, am 0-2. That is
0-2.
And we're 1-1.
When we're 1-1. It's not that hard. I will attempt to keep track. And then as we get further in the season, you know, we'll have maybe we'll have a listener contest about what happens to the one with the worst picks and what happens to one with the best picks.
This is getting very Mike and Mike for my taste. But okay.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Like little gimmicky. All right. Yeah,
but we're new, so we can rely on some gimmicks.
Okay.
If you want to give us some gimmicks, you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/bbillsmny. You can let us know what gimmicks you think we should employ or not employ. And you can do that on Twitter as well, if you can manage that in 140 characters or less. BBillsMNY on Twitter.
Or talk to us about the Bills themselves and not just this podcast.
And as you can tell by our podcast, we'll talk about just about anything. So go for it. If you want to engage us on what your favorite Nintendo game was or what your most annoying like Nintendo bugaboo was, maybe you disliked the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles original NES game, which was maybe the hardest game ever invented.
Maybe you're a Sega Genesis man. Maybe you're from a little later generation. Yeah, exactly.
Had a TurboGrafx-16 like I did for a little while.
Absolutely, yeah. We can
Frank
talk.
And eight other people had a TurboGrafx-16, I believe.
Courage in the Alpha Zone, my friend. Keith Courage in the Alpha Zone. Fabulously awful game. And Legendary Axe, which actually was pretty good.
Okay.
Their sports games weren't too bad. Okay, anyway. So Facebook, Twitter, Gmail, bbillsmny@gmail.com, our website, bbillsmny.wordpress.com. You can find us on iTunes. You can put us in your RSS feed. You can do that. Just search Buffalo Bills maybe next year. We're going to post this Google Hangout to our YouTube page, and I think we're going to kind of do this from now on, unfortunately. So get used to this. and actually, as we get a little bit better at this, we'll start giving you guys the link ahead of time so you can come in, you can chat with us, ask questions, and we'll go.
And we'll ignore them from
yeah, we'll just
real and in person.
We'll pretend like we can't work our computer. But until next time, where we're probably talking about a third Buffalo Bills victory. My name is Frank.
I'm Scott.
I'm Paulie Mixnuts.
Good night, everyone. Stop the broadcast.